Hey, Weekly Pulse on all things green and gold with the three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilding. I'm ESPN Wisconsin's Alex Stroph. The Packers in first place of the NFC North and the NFC after a win on Sunday Night Football in Pittsburgh. Now 5-1-1 on the season as they get ready to host the Carolina Panthers at Lambeau Field on Sunday. Hey, Jason.
Stroph.
How's it?
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I feel like this is a trap episode.
As in, this is a trap game coming Sunday for the Packers?
You're a sharp one. Yeah.
Why is that? You think they're looking ahead? You think they're riding too high?
No, I don't think that they're going to treat it that way. But Matt LaFleur dismissing the idea that it is, I mean, it is a textbook trap game. You're coming off of a, even though they downplayed it, you tell me going to Pittsburgh, winning for the first time since 1970 in franchise history, and oh, by the way, beating Aaron Rodgers, who happens to be the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers, on the road,
yeah,
and then having the defending Super Bowl champs next up on the schedule, and in between you're playing the 4-4, which I think is worth noting because people act like these guys are 0-8, but they have found a way to win four games. But this is what trap games are made of. I'm not saying that his guys are going to fall into the trap, but let's not be dismissive. It's just sort of like this whole targets thing. I noticed that I had written that already, but I thought it was interesting. He kind of went off on that a little bit yesterday, and it's great. You want to believe? I understand what you want to believe. But these guys are human beings.
Right.
So, and maybe everybody's all kumbaya and happy-go-lucky. Yeah. And I'm thrilled to have caught three passes. But I don't think that's how people work.
I also don't think that's how people work. And we can get back to the pass catchers part of this football team because I am fascinated by it after a big game by Tucker Kraft on Sunday. But I guess that leads me to this when I hear you talk about the idea of a trap game. I'm sure you've said it, but I know a bunch of fans have heard say it, and I've certainly had the thought after the loss to Cleveland earlier in the year. Is the idea of playing down to your competition a real thing, or is it more so just it's the NFL, the difference between the 32nd best team and the best team is much thinner than people realize?
I think it's both, but I personally think it's the NFL is hard. Like even bad teams, like I always love the one where it's, Alabama is the best team in the country by far. Could they beat the Jaguars?
Yeah, and the answer is always no. Right.
But I suppose, the U.S. beat, Russia in 1980 in hockey. But no, look, it's, like, even against not-so-good teams, it's like four or five plays in a game that decide who wins and who loses. So, yeah, are these guys, again, human beings? Absolutely. Do they go in and go, come on, Carolina? Sure, I'm sure they're somewhere in the recesses of their brain that's happening. But again, it's Matt's job to try and convince them, hey, these guys can beat us. We got to have our blank together. And I think he does a good job of that. But yeah, you're not going to be as jacked up for this game as you will be next Monday night. You just won't. The thing about it is, and this has always been my thing about this, and I don't know if other people see it this way, we were flat, we didn't come to play, all that stuff. It's kind of a chicken and the egg, because to me, if you execute early in the game, you're not flat. But if you execute poorly, then you can become flat, because then you're like, oh, here, like the Packers, were they flat for the Pittsburgh game? No. But did they execute poorly to get 3-3 and outs in the first half? Darn tootin' they were. So to me, it's always about execution. And if you're got, and that's every level too, right? Like, Sydney's volleyball team loses because they put six serves into the net. Those are unforced errors that cost you the game. Does that mean they didn't want to put the ball in? Does that mean they didn't care about winning? No. But if you execute poorly, bad stuff happens. And then you most likely lose the game. And in the Packers' case, they've lost one, they've tied one, and then they've escaped with some, you know, less than stellar performances and one or two others.
Darn tootin'.
I thought you'd like that.
I did like that. The Packers, though, have won three in a row, obviously, coming off of this win in Pittsburgh, which was a really impressive second half, especially on the offensive side of things. Jordan Love was phenomenal. I'd argue it's one of the best game, one of the best regular season games of his career. He wins Offensive Player of the Week in the NFC for the first time in this show's history, Jason. Last time he did it was Week 18 of 2023, when Jordan Love last won the NFC Offensive Player of the Week. This is his third time winning the award. He won it back-to-back weeks in 2023. And now here in week number, what was it, week 8? Yeah, week 8 of the NFL. He was, like I said, I mean, I thought he was awesome last week in Pittsburgh. He had the 20 completions in a row, which is the longest streak for the Packers since Brett Favre, something Aaron Rodgers has never done, something obviously Love has never done. Tucker Kraft was awesome, but just on Love, it's a guy we talk a lot about. How good is he? How good can he be? How consistent can he be? What are his bugaboos? When does he mess up? But I really have no knocks from that Pittsburgh game. I walked out of there going, okay, it looked like he took a step today. What were your takeaways from Love's performance on Sunday night?
Oh, I have knocks. I have knocks. But it's because I hate him, of course.
Yeah, right. Uh-oh. So, what did somebody say to you on the internet?
No. It's just frequent. Because, again, and what – we've talked about this time and again. Like, one of the reasons I really like him is not only because I think he's an authentically good dude, right? And he's easy to root for, and that's not my job to root for him. But, like, there were some people that wrote, you know, these glowing stories about how great he was going to be, and not even the Packers knew he was going to be that, right? I mean, that's why Goody gave Rodgers that second contract on his watch. But what I would say is that I really like, as I've told you many times, that he is honest and he takes ownership.
Yeah.
Like after the game, did you see the quote where he said, I was just hoping nothing bad happened on the throw to Tucker Kraft? Like, he knew it was the right throw, mm-hmm. like the coverage. And he did a great job of explaining it yesterday. Like, I really enjoyed it. But the bottom line is, he took a big-time risk.
That was a
there.
Risky throw, no doubt.
Right? And then the other one, the one for 33 yards to Watson, which, again, that counts for 92 of his yards in the game,
that's true.
Those two throws.
That's true.
And technically, he shouldn't have made them. So what's funny, though, is, and this is the reason I bring it up, is my Sunday story for Channel 3000 is going to be, this is a sign that he's along the path, right? Mm-hmm. Because at some point, when you're good, you take chances, and they maybe are chances that you as a rookie or as a first-year starter should not have taken. But now you've got some, as Mike McCarthy would say, pelts on the wall. So take a shot, man. And now, could those have ended badly? Absolutely. For but sure. As he said, Tucker made him right on the one. And so I just, you know, that is, is that a criticism that those were two big plays that he shouldn't have thrown? I don't know. I'm telling you that his coaches feel like he shouldn't have thrown them. So take that for what it's worth. But that, again, like, that's what's the separator, right? Like, do we think Rodgers never threw a ball he shouldn't have thrown? Even as interception averse as he was? Of course there were balls that he threw that, and it worked out, right? Same with Favre, but then there were a lot that didn't work out.
That's true, but he was a little gunslinger-esque, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. And Love has been compared to a little bit of both of them through his now third year as the starter, and both of those throws had a little bit of both of them in him. There's layers to this Jordan Love conversation on everything you just said, so I just want to hit on a few things. So those throws in particular, the Kraft one, I think we were all going, oh, crap, oh, crap, oh, crap. And then Tucker Kraft did Tucker Kraft stuff by throwing guys out of his way and bringing it 59 yards. On the Watson throw, that one was more impressive to me for a few reasons. Number one, it was further down the field. But number two, the way he extended the play, he eluded the pocket, he got out to his right, and he kind of flung the ball sideways, like threw his arm sideways, and he put it in a spot where only Watson could get it. I was never worried that ball was going to be intercepted. And Watson obviously made a great play, and he was awesome in his return game, his season debut. But that throw by Love was certainly impressive to me. I thought that was a whoa, like almost a you've arrived throw, if you will. And I don't mean to overreact. That's probably an overreaction. But that was his most impressive throw of the day in my mind, that 33-yarder to Watson.
Yeah, he committed the mortal sin late down the middle.
Yeah.
And he, that's not me saying that. That's him saying that.
But again, when you got pelts on the wall.
Right. So that's my point. And that's what made it. Look, is he going to throw a couple more of those that aren't going to work out
yes.
over the course of the next 10 games? Yeah, he probably is. But I, you know, again, I'm always thinking not only in terms of what we're talking about on the air or what I'm talking about on TV, but also obviously first and foremost, the stories that I want to tell in the written form. And I asked him about, you know, I also asked him about the interception in Cleveland and the dawdling, for lack of a better term, in the final seconds of overtime in Dallas. And he offered up the interception he threw in San Francisco.
Sure.
And talking about how you have to learn from all this stuff. And I don't know how, you know, first of all, I don't know how anybody thinks I don't like him. I'm not going to say it. But on top of that, like he's just, it's fun to watch him developing. Now, I'm not like going to get swept up in the euphoria and say, you know, he's going to win the MVP this year or he's going to have a Hall of Fame career. I have no idea. I knew Rodgers was special at this point. I didn't think he necessarily was going to win four MVPs, but I thought he'd win a Super Bowl. You know, am I sure that Love will win a Super Bowl? I'm not as confident as I was back then, but there's nothing but good things to like about him.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah, and there are really good signs of progression, which I think is what we're all still looking for because it's so early on in his career. But one statistic, and look, you and I both know stats don't tell the full story. They can tell you some things, but they don't tell you the full story. He's completed 70.9% of his passes this year, just a touch under 71% of his passes. Quarterbacks that have thrown at least 100 attempts this year and have a over 70% completion percentage are Drake May, Jared Goff, Daniel Jones, Jordan Love, Dak Prescott, Jalen Hurts. It's pretty good company. For Jordan Love in terms of the completion percentage, that would be the highest mark of his career if he was to finish over 70%. So to see that number go up, and obviously to see only two interceptions next to his name through seven games, both good signs of progression in my mind.
Well, it's also a sign, like, that's where it's supposed to be in this offense, too, remember?
Definitely.
Like, this is not Lynn Dickey chucking it down the field for Paul Kaufman, James Lofton, and John Jefferson. Like it is designed to have a high completion rate. And I didn't go back and look what his air yards were separate of those two plays we just talked about. But again, if you're doing what the offense is designed to do, like I don't understand if you're looking at kind of the big picture of his performance, like, who cares if a lot of the yards came because he got the ball out quick to a guy and then that guy made a guy miss and gained 11 yards on a ball that only carried 2 yards in the air? Like, you know, again, why do we have to? And look, I don't think anybody's doing this, but there are probably some Jordan Love haters that are still left that are saying, well, you know, it's not that hard in the system. He's scheming guys open. Well, remember in 2018, Aaron Rodgers was dying for a system like this. This is what he wanted. Like, I tell that story all the time about after the Vikings and Rams were on Thursday Night Football, and Rodgers, Cobb, and Adams are all in the locker room, off the record, buzzing about, boy, wouldn't it be fun to play in an offense like that? There's guys open everywhere, was Devontae's line. Like, yeah, that's what's great about this system. That's why so many teams use it. So I don't want to diminish the completion percentage, but he should be doing that. And the fact that he is, he does deserve praise for that.
Well, I think it's important to point out that guy you just mentioned, that under LaFleur, Rodgers only completed 70% of his passes once, and that was in his 2020 MVP campaign. Rodgers has only completed more than 70% of his passes twice in his career. And one of those years was 2007 when he wasn't even the starter yet. So, worth pointing out. 70% is pretty darn good.
Yeah, different offense, but sure, worth pointing out.
But 2020 was the same offense. 70.7% right. Completion percentage. And he was under 70% every other year under LaFleur.
Yeah, he plays that position. He played the position obviously differently, right? He extended plays to a much greater degree. You know, LaFleur was talking last week before they played him about how, you know, the blending of what he wanted to do and what Rodgers wanted to do. I'm sure there are remnants of that.
I was just about
Jordan
to ask.
Now.
Yeah,
but it's probably a closer to a purer form of what LaFleur wanted to do than what Rodgers was running.
Where else have you seen Love grow up in terms of being a quarterback? Because I think this year it seems like he's got, unless you think I'm wrong here, but to me, just the simple eye test tells me he looks more confident running this offense this year than maybe he was the prior 2 years. Seems like he has more of a command of the offense. Seems like he's getting a little bit better at extending plays and making those positive yardage plays. Where have you seen some growth from Love?
Well, and in fairness, he wasn't able to do those things last year, right?
Well, I mean, because of the injury,
right? Like he was, but again, and I said it at the time, and I still stand by it. Guy, everyone, it's 100% injury rate in this league.
Yep.
So you have to figure out a way to succeed. And by the way, he did, except for in the six games they played against the Eagles, Lions, and Vikings. But like, you know, he had to adjust his game. Now you're seeing him play the game the way he wants to play it. And that's subtle movements in the pocket to be able to avoid pressure. I mean, I was looking at this, like Drake May's been sacked 28 times. Love's been sacked 10.
Right.
And now, is that getting the ball out quickly? Yes, but that's also, this guy lost containment on the D end, and he takes a little subtle step up, avoids that pressure, and either gets the ball out or gains a couple of yards running. He's able to run. He had surpassed last year's run total after five games. So, yeah, like, he is playing at a – like, my frustration is instead of just saying, this guy's playing really good football, it's, well, should he be the MVP? Should he be the lead candidate for the – well, I don't know. Like, it seems like Josh Allen had a couple of rough games. I saw him on TV the other day after they won, like, 40-7, saying, yeah, I played like crap.
It's probably Mahomes' award to lose at this point, but I think Love is certainly in the conversation.
Sure, and let's see what he does in the next 10 games.
Yep.
But if he keeps playing like this the rest of the year, and he has one of those kind of Aaron Rodgers years where he throws 38 touchdowns and five picks, yeah, like, do I think he's going to win the MVP? The Packers have to probably finish with the number one seed.
Yep, I agree.
Right? And if they don't. But again, that doesn't – like, we're so obsessed with stuff like that. Like, to me, it's all about the fact that he is playing the way that they envisioned and didn't know if he could for the first couple of years. Like, again, the revisionist historians, like, if you watched him in 21, you're like, oh, my God. And quite frankly, and I didn't bring this up last week, but I do wonder, you know, because I led the charge. I wrote a story about it and everything. But, like, I wonder if Rodgers would have been so magnanimous with him if he felt more threatened. Like, Favre was clearly threatened by Rodgers. Like, he watched him and he said, yeah, this guy's a young knucklehead, but holy crap, can he put balls where no one else can? And those first 2 years, Jordan did not, you didn't look at him and go, you looked and said, wow, he's tall, he's athletic, he's got big hands, he's got some of the measurables. But then you'd watch him in practice and you're like, Really? And then, I think he is the epitome of the guy that took advantage of the 3 years. So, like, if they'd have thrown him in right away, like, say Rodgers gets hurt and they don't have Tim Boyle, or they realize Tim Boyle, as subsequently was proven, was probably not someone you wanted starting a lot of games for you, and they threw Jordan in there, I would be worried about what his career arc would have been.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's unfair. And that's my point, is that sucks. Like, you're seeing Baker Mayfield and other quarterbacks who, that's what happened to them, and they never hit the ground running because they had to play right away, and they were on bad teams, and they got beat up, and they played poorly.
Yeah, I mean, you see a redemption arc just about every year now, it seems, in the NFL. This year's version of it is Daniel Jones in Indianapolis. He's having an awesome year.
Yeah, great example.
But last year it was Sam Darnold in Minnesota. The year prior it was Baker in Tampa Bay. I feel like Geno Smith had a time or two in Seattle. It seems like every year in the NFL you get a redemption story of a highly drafted quarterback that didn't pan out in his original location. But to your point, I believe the word you used was magnanimous, certainly a word in my vocabulary. I don't know if Love would have been more of a pure, or maybe less of a project. And I don't mean that as a diss. It's just what he was. He needed some time to develop.
Right.
Would Rodgers have treated him any differently? I don't know if he would have, in credit of Rodgers, because I think he was always pretty clear that he wanted to treat whoever was coming in to replace him differently than Favre treated him. And I think it probably would have been
Correct.
that way either way.
And look, my point is that he had a phenomenal track record,
Yeah.
right? Of Matt Flynn, Scott Tolzien, like all those guys, DeShone Kizer, Brett Hundley, like he was good to all of them. And you're 1,000% right. I mean, he and I have talked about that before, that it was important to him not to
Yeah.
put Jordan. I'm sure Rodgers rubbed Favre the wrong way from time to time too, right? Because he can do that. But it was definitely important. I'm just saying that, at some point, if you start to be like, oh, this guy's actually pretty good, I'm not saying you're then going to turn into a mean girl. I'm just saying that it's a lot easier to be nice to Scott Tolzien
It sure is.
or Matt Flynn.
Yeah, no, you're right.
That's all.
Yeah, it's a good point by you. All right, let's move on to Tucker Kraft because he has just been awesome for this team. National Tight Ends Day, which I don't think either you or I realized was a thing. Did you know that was happening prior to Sunday?
Every day is something. Like yesterday was like National Cat Day
Yeah,
or something.
National Oatmeal Day, I believe, was also yesterday. What's today? Let's look it up quick. But how about Tucker Kraft? 2 touchdowns, over 100 yards receiving, 7 catches on Sunday. He is quickly emerging as one of the best tight ends in the league, but also emerging as maybe the best pass catcher, the number one pass catcher, if you will. I know Matt LaFleur probably wants to vomit because I said it on this team.
Yeah, he is. And you can't, he's not vomiting because he's the one who said that when Pete Doherty asked him after the game, because no one was in the press conference other than Pete, we'd be crazy not to build our passing game around him. So he's the one who put it out there. But yeah, look, and this is just my opinion. That's just like your opinion, man.
Man, yeah.
I think it's still important to make sure everyone feels like they're involved, or you get
Yeah.
all kinds of waxy buildup. And so, yes, he should definitely be the player who is the number one read on more plays than anyone else. That does not mean that the ball is going to go to him on that many more plays. But, LaFleur was asked earlier in the week about this. Is it because he's being designed to get the ball more? Or is it because he's always open? And he said, it's both, right? Like they do have more plays for him because they should, but he's also open to get the ball. But he's been, look, no tight end in the NFL, I saw this stat yesterday, is averaging more yards per game than him.
That adds up. 143 of them on Sunday, and to go with the 2 touchdowns on 7 catches for Tucker Kraft, including that fun 59-yard gain that we talked about a little bit earlier. Matthew Golden, why isn't he being featured more?
Well, he just was a couple weeks ago,
Yeah.
right? 3 catches for 86 yards. Then the following week, He like caught three balls in the first like eight plays
and
or
didn't
something
get another catch, I
preposterous.
don't think. Yeah.
And then they never saw the ball again. Yeah, again, this is hard. Like LaFleur kind of got, I wasn't there, obviously. I was doing the show with Bulaga yesterday. But like he kind of got pissed about the target questions. Like, I don't know. Did you chop up the audio or did
I didn't.
Will
It
or
was Will, yeah.
Like, because, and again, I'm not there. So you can say that I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But somebody asked him, let me go to the transcript. Somebody said something about targets, and this first, you guys never talk about targets, only every other hour.
Wow.
And then he said, what would you guys, it was Ryan Wood, apparently. What would you guys like it to be? That's what I want to know. I want to know what would be your ideal in your guys' world to allow us to, you know, not have to answer these questions every week.
Yeah.
I mean, again, on paper, I'm going to, if I can get that ready for Jesse, for our show, I want to explore this because that sounds like irritation to me. But here's my point. Before we go, I like the fact that he wants to get everyone involved, mm-hmm. right? Like,
not
and
a
I
bad
always
thing
say,
necessarily.
This is not Little League where everybody, you know, gets to play their two innings and pick dandelions in right field. I believe together everyone achieves more. I do. I believe that. And also, you don't want a out of sync locker room where guys are walking around pissed all the time because they never see the ball. But this is, you know, is this the right way to build a team? We don't have time to debate that. I would say more often than not, the more good players I have on my team, the better my team is. So I want that, right?
Sure.
But right now, like, we're having this conversation, and Wicks didn't play last week, and Reed is on IR. And both of those guys have had really good moments as well in their career. Reed's led them in receptions and yardage each of the last 2 years. So, like, those are guys you want involved. You want Kraft involved. You want Golden involved. You just got Watson back. You certainly want him to get the ball. Romeo Doubs is your reliable red zone third down guy. Like, I don't know, Jim. Like, I don't know how you keep all these people happy. And as much as he may have been irritated with the question, maybe that's revelatory about how difficult the job is when you have this many good. I love it. You hear me say this all the time. I love it when a coach says it's a good problem to have, because the operative word in there is you acknowledging it is a problem.
Yep. Good point by you. That's journalistic stuff right there by Jason Wilde. The trap episode, potential trap game. We'll dive in more to that on Green Bay Game Day in the 10 o'clock hour with Gabe Neitzel on Sunday from just outside of Lambeau Field on Green Bay Game Day. It's Packers-Panthers at Lambeau Field on Sunday. Packers 3-0 at home this year, looking to make it a perfect 4-0 with a win over the Panthers. Jason, we will talk to you Sunday on Green Bay Game Day. Appreciate the time as always.
It is a privilege and an honor.
No sarcasm detected. Find Jason on social at Jason J. Wilde. Read him, channel3000.com, and sign up for the Extra Points newsletter over at channel3000.com. Look at that smile because I plugged his newsletter. We'll talk to you next week. It's Weekly Wilde.
All right, buddy. Take care. Be good.